time is important on the phenomenal plane, and that's the reason for this satsang, because today is a very important day in history. We have crossed another milestone in the climactic movement of the symphony of time toward the end of Kali Yuga, and a huge step was taken in the external plane today, and I hope this won't trigger anyone to fall into paranoia. But because that's not my intention, nor is it God's intention, but the ego has that tendency. So it needs to be taken in the right way. But in particular, at the macrocosmic planetary level, two events have taken place in the last 24 or so hours, which I'm sure you're all aware of. And they are separate, but not coincidentally related, but related in a much more whole cloth way that will accelerate events into a much higher frequency and of intensity toward the denouement of our cosmic drama. One, of course, is the recognition by Russia of the Donbas republics, who broke away from Ukraine, and the entry of Russian military into the Donbas, which is considered by the West as an invasion of Ukraine, which they, in a way, forced and finally achieved by shelling the area with artillery to such an extent that Russia could not passively sit by and watch Russian people living there be exterminated. So the action was taken, and immediately the reaction that was planned, which includes Germany's cutting off of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, right? You're all aware of that, which is a very strange move. They did it to punish Russia, but it's like, I'm going to shoot myself, and that will punish you, right? Because Russia needs the gas. I mean, Germany needs the gas. Russia doesn't need it. Russia can sell all the gas it wants to China and to other countries. It has no need for that pipeline. It was done for the sake of Germany. So then you have to ask, why would a government act in a way that shoots itself, not just in the foot, but actually in a much more important organ than that, because the entire German economy is going to collapse with either without gas or with having to pay triple the amount or get it from the U.S. on ships, and the U.S. doesn't even have it. The U.S. is actually importing Russian oil, so it'll be sold to them wholesale and then retail sold back to them. So the entire thing is so absurd that, of course, it has to be a simulation, but you have to ask, well, why would a government do that to act so against its own interests, right? And the typical political analyst says, well, they're vassal states of the U.S., and so their arms were twisted to do something that would only hurt themselves, and Russia's laughing about it as if this is something dangerous to them. But there's more to it than that, because we have to keep in mind the fact that Germany's domestic policy has already for some time been the destruction of its own society. So if the shutting off of that pipeline leads to Germans freezing to death and the collapse of the German economy, that's simply part of what their policy has been all along, which is why the mandates of the injections and the lockdowns, masking, et cetera, right? So we're all aware of that, and that this is the West's policy. So we have to always keep in mind the difference between a government and the people who are governed by it. They do not have the same interests. They do not have the same frame of reference and the same, let's say, attitude toward life. There's a very different attitude, which again is expressed by another event that has just occurred, which is in Canada, the Parliament has ratified the totalitarian dictates of Trudeau and has accepted it becoming a permanent policy, right? Which means your bank account can be taken, your children can be taken, your dogs and cats can be taken if you're arrested, right? Everything. The global reset started with the motto, you will own nothing and be happy, right? Well, if you don't look happy, you will not only own nothing, you won't be alive. So this is totalitarianism at its worst and finest and most obvious and gross. So we have that at the same time that we have a situation which is increasing the collapse of the entire establishment of the Western Empire, and that is ratcheting up the tension toward total war and destruction. So it's important to understand this from a spiritual perspective, not simply a political one, so that we don't get paranoid and we don't get confused by it, although its consequences at the phenomenal plane level are going to be that a lot of people are going to be escaping from Canada and looking for refuge. If there are any who want spiritual refuge and not just political refuge, then we'll open our doors as well. But the issue is that the world now is going to be in a very different mode of operation, because if it succeeds in Canada, if this can be sustained and the population doesn't overthrow this, it will spread to the U.S., it will spread to many other countries, it will become a globalized policy of totalitarian control, right? So seeing the writing on the wall, then there has to be an understanding of its significance. Why is this occurring within the world drama? What is the meaning and message for us as yogis and as beings who are not in the fray, who are not, in a certain way, we don't have a dog in the fight, because if you're a yogi, you want liberation from this plane. You don't, at least one would hope, you're not obsessed with a kind of political activism that moves within the same frame of reference as those actions are within the field of Maya that it is. So Pratibha is a concept that the world is a reflection, right? And it becomes gradually an inverse reflection, the opposite. You look in a mirror, you see your features in the reverse of how they appear within the anatomy. So when totalitarianism appears within the reflection, it means total consciousness must also appear as the counterpart of that takeover, right? That form of external government requires the self-government of consciousness to have reached its total capacity of complete mastery over itself. In the same way that the mastery of a government over its people and enslaving it means that the ego and the soul have in effect been enslaved, become servers without resistance, without separation of the self, the supreme self, and that one has realized that self and has achieved sovereignty. So the shift toward this in the phenomenal plane indicates that this must happen, it will happen, and therefore the energies that will enable you as an individual to download that power of total consciousness is being given. Okay? The grace to be the counterweight of the pratipa is on offer to those who are willing and able to overcome the ego's paranoia and the ego's smallness and concern only for a tiny group of beings that it might want to rescue or to remain attached to or to be concerned about or to be concerned only at the phenomenal plane level of its hopes to find some kind of safety or create some political movement or whatever. There has to be a shift from that sliver of a subset of our whole consciousness into the totality. All right? So it means that there must be ever more now of a letting go of the tiny, helpless consciousness to the sovereign level of consciousness, which is God consciousness. And what that the situation indicates is that the power to do that is available if you choose that above any other intentions at the lower levels. Okay? In the same way that the government is choosing an intention and sticking to it, regardless of the fact that he's being booed from all parts of the world for this and totally criticized, even in the parliament, criticizing him loudly but doing nothing to change the vote, right? So the consciousness must become immune to any of the conflicting drives at the lower levels and not be influenced by them to gain its throne of totality, of wholeness. Does this make sense to people? Are you on board with this? Okay. The problem for some who are not yogis or who are part-time yogis, perhaps, or semi-yogis, is that there isn't a complete faith in the power to transcend the ego, and there's enough identification that the ego, rather than simply doing, being itself, its real self, letting go of the mask and focus on activity that is a running away from one's being, instead of doing that, one will ask, how do I do it? What do I do? And run around as a chicken without its head, unlike our beautiful creatures. But it will act in a way that will produce karmic crashes. So in the first place, we need a new Pascalian wager. Remember Pascal, the famous French philosopher who wasn't sure that God really existed, but, you know, he was a good Catholic, and he said, well, if God doesn't exist and I believe in him, okay, what have I done? I've been a fool, but I haven't lost anything. I've acted well. I've followed commandments, you know, and I've done all the things that you're supposed to do. I've kept kosher. No, I don't think he would have done that, but he would have followed the golden rule. And if God is real and God is there, then he will be saved, redeemed, right? So very little to lose and a lot to gain. Whereas if God is real and he says, I don't believe it, I'm going to stay on this plane, he's lost redemption. He's lost the hope of heaven, of eternal salvation in God's kingdom. So in a certain way now, we have to look at the situation in the world from a practical perspective and say, if the world is not actually owned and operated by God, then the criminals will win. If God is not real and God is not the master of the hologram, then the ones with the power of the weapons and the power of the media and the power of all the technology cannot be defeated. But if God is real and that power can be downloaded and applied in this plane, then the good guys can win. Right? Because God's will be fulfilled on earth as it is in heaven. But that will depends on those who are loyal servers of God to claim that power and to transmit it and disseminate it. And so the very practical, ground-level consequence of the situation is that if we want to be of any help on the political or social or on the plane of compassion, then we have to do that from that place of total consciousness and make use of our knowledge that God is real and God is the self to enslave the ego to the service of God and the soul to open up to complete union with God so that that non-duality is then expressed in fullness as the world itself, as a reflection of God, becoming raised into the vibrational frequency that will truly reflect again the light, not the darkness, but the light of God's presence. And we have the ability to do that. So each one will have to decide if you are a part of that transmission of divine energy. So that's one issue. The second one is that in order to do that, that has to be your only priority. You can't have conflicting drives and be wanting to be part-time in the ego and operating from that level and part-time in the higher dimension. You won't get to the higher dimension if there is still an investment in identification with the body and with reactions, emotional reactions to the body's pains and sufferings and aging and loss of certain capacities and all of the things that people get obsessed about when the bodies get older, including the looks of the body and all of that. But that narcissistic relationship to the body and to getting the gaze of either erotic enjoyment or affirmation or validation of whatever kind from others also has to be let go of if one is wanting the gaze from the eye of God. If you want the eye of Shiva to be giving you drishti and you're receiving that, then it's not someone else's drishti you're looking for. Right? That's where non-duality comes in, and that's when your own drishti will become powerful. But if there's still ego identity, then the ego, because it's in a state of lack, wants to receive. It doesn't have much to give. And so it falls into an internal collapse of a vacuum of power because it needs to be affirmed by others. So we need to be immune to that. So a lot of people today are concerned about unplugging from EMFs. Given the situation that the world is in, we need to shift our frame of reference and understand EMF as the entire Maya field. And that's what we have to unplug from. You're not going to be able to unplug, or if you do, it will actually have some negative effects upon your capacities to function and to act as a bodhisattva if you try to disconnect prematurely from the electric grid. That I think the grids are going to go down anyway as part of a plan, but we have to unplug from Maya. If you don't unplug from the field of Maya, you will not be able to then plug into the field of Brahman, of God consciousness, and bring in divine energy. And the field of Maya is a field of energies that bring jouissance. There's an enjoyment, there's a thrill that comes from those energies of the lower three chakras. That's the Maya field. But if you're plugged into those, they will create an interference pattern that will cause you not to be able to receive the energy of the higher chakras. And so you have to decide, which ones do you want? 1, 2, and 3, or do you want 4, 5, 6, and 7? Because that's where the real power is, that's where the bliss is, and that's where the conquest of death is achieved. And if you're going to be functioning on this plane in the conditions that are arising now and going to become more drastic, you need to know and feel and have achieved a state in which you know you are not defeated by death. And once there is conquest of death and fearlessness of what they can do to you, then you can function with dignity and with grace and with truth and with power and face whatever must be faced and not be concerned with the body's expiration date. So this is a very important threshold that must be crossed in order to be able to be here in true self-sovereignty. And so my suggestion is that this should become a very high priority for everyone by unplugging from the Maya field, but really examining what are you still plugged into? What is it that is still an attachment that you're not willing to let go of? What are you holding on to that keeps you from the flow of Shakti that would be more than compensate from whatever you're getting from what you're plugged into now, which is probably just a lot of very negative and chaotic energy, frankly, and a lot of disappointment and a lot of short-circuiting, because that field is not giving back much juice these days. It's giving back a lot of stuff from the exhaust pipe of Maya, not much of the gas. And it's out of gas, just like Europe. So this is a situation where choose the source of power and ally with that, not with a power that is fake and that is not strong enough to support you and not strong enough to raise you out of a sense of mortality and of inability to find happiness, to find peace within your own mind. If you're in the ego state, you will not be at peace. And your mind will be racing all the time, trying to find what you're looking for in the wrong places. And your peacelessness will grow, your exhaustion will grow, your ultimately despair and dread and death drive will take over. So to avoid that fate, it's very important to plug into the presence of Shiva, the presence of God, and thereby gain the Buddha nature, gain Christ consciousness, gain whatever term in whatever religious background you still relate to as signifying the attainment of divine energy while alive in the body as a manifestation of the presence and the eternal light of God as yourself. And this is the transformation that has to happen in order to overcome the energies that are now massing in Kali Yuga to bring about a collective planetary death. So, I think that that's pretty much what I wanted to express to the group tonight. And I'll open the floor to see if anyone has comments or questions and perhaps take the dialogue deeper and further. But let's see how people feel about all of this that's occurring. So, floor is open. Lakshmi, you have the mic.
Thank you for this teaching. And I think it's the second time I hear you recently say about this this polarity. I don't know if polarity is the right word, but I find that fascinating in a recent teaching. I think in the morning or something you mentioned that as well. And in the meditation you also spoke about this inverse reflection being projected out of God consciousness when one is one with that total consciousness. So I shared I was fascinated by the 10 P's of the Tao, right? Mm-hmm. And polarity being one of them. Mm-hmm. Pendularity, and I don't know if I'm just stuck with that, but it seems to me that something that connects these two, polarity and pendularity, is what you expressed tonight, because what I thought was fascinating is by seeing the reflection in the phenomenal field of the totalitarianism, not easy to pronounce, then that means that that same energy inversely is now available, right?
Yes.
And I just wanted to comment how exciting that is, I find, that's number great. One. And number two, if you could speak a little more about these two, the polarity, the pendularity, and the reflection. And you mentioned pratibha, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what is that related to that? And maybe speak a little more about it to have a little more information.
Okay. A pendularity is polarity in time. Right? Polarity is in space, pendularity is in time. So yes, indeed, the pendulum is about to swing from Kali Yuga to Sat Yuga, right? That's a total shift from the darkest of the dark to the brightest of the bright. So we're about to hit that. But the way we have to get there is through an internal micro-pendularity along the way, in which we rise to ever higher chakras through recognizing what the reflection is within the ego that we now no longer want to be. The ego, on a microcosmic level, is the inverse projection of the God self, right? So the same thing that we were pointing out on the macro level, everyone can see at the micro level. And then using that same pendularity to keep rising. And that's where the spiral of Kundalini comes in, right? So the pendulum from 3 will switch to 5, and then from 2 to 6 and 1 to 7. So that pendularity will happen in time, but it must also be a polarization that takes you from the lower chakras to the higher ones in a single leap as well, that will then be fleshed out and established through the process of the spiraling out of the energies toward the absolute. Right? So the more that one is awake and aware and emptied out of ego chatter, the more one will receive the downloads and the Shakti and the will, the Tao energy in itself, a precognitive impulse, not a will of I should do this or I want that, no, but an impulse will come that comes directly from God consciousness and doesn't stop at language in between and just becomes in a spontaneous movement, right? That's Icha. Icha becomes jnana and becomes kriya, right? But it's Icha first, which is the impulse. That impulse becomes an aha, and it becomes then the action that happens, which is the Tao itself unfolding. All right? And your life will become a movement of that energy without a middleman of an ego deciding, should I do that or shouldn't I? Right? It'll just be spontaneous in the flow. So that's what the transformation does. It takes out that middleman, which is a censor, that says, no, I can't do that, right? And says, no, and there will be nothing to say, I can't do it, or I shouldn't do it, or I'm too modest to do it, or I'm too whatever. And it says yes to whatever the impulse is. And that gives knowledge, right? By saying yes, by allowing the energy to flow without interference, knowledge comes as a byproduct, and then the action happens beautifully and effortlessly and accurately.
So what we need to do is to attune ourselves to that impulse.
It comes out of the zero point. So yes, there has to be love and dedication for that. That's Shiva, Parama Shiva. You know, the Kashmir Shaivites say you can't love Shiva directly because Shiva is too inconceivable. What you should really love is the goddess, right? Shakti. Why love Shakti? Because Shakti is the one who is actually the controller of nature. Shiva doesn't care about nature. You know, let it happen. You know, Shiva's beyond. But Shakti is the energy that actually controls the phenomenal plane. But Shakti is getting it from Shiva and is actually not different. They seem to be different in duality, but they are not. So that energy that is the power of nature within is what that impulse will be made of. So it comes as Shakti, it morphs into prana, and then suddenly it's action at a muscular level and at a mental level simultaneously. But you will be more shocked about what's happening than anyone because you didn't decide to do it or to or create whatever it is that is the result. Right? That's the surrender.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. You just said something I thought was very interesting, and I want to ask a little bit more. You mentioned when the impulse comes, there's a yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, is there ever a no? And maybe it doesn't come in a form of yes or no, but that impulse, what I'm interpreting it as, is a download or information that comes from the source, not the ego mind thinking yes, no, black, white, etc. So when even if something may seem like the answer is no, the information is always coming as an impulse to know what to do. So it's more like a haji. I don't know if it's a little hard to explain the question, but
well, the problem is that your ego has a sensor, And it doesn't want to know, and it doesn't want to act the will of God, because that may not be in its own interests, right? I mean, look at the Christian martyrs. Most people would rather not be martyrs, right? So if God tells you you have to do something that will result in your martyrdom, you might say, well, wait a minute, right? No, thanks, right? So that's why the will has to be totally surrendered to God, so that it's not a saying yes of the ego. The ego is not even asked. The soul, perhaps, is allowing the flow to come, but the ego is already going to have nothing and do what it's told and be happy, right? But it's not asked permission. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Peter.
So the light people will be reflecting the light, and the ego people will be reflecting the darkness. And if I understand correctly, both of that will be happening at the same time, and more people, as they shift from the ego consciousness to the God consciousness, there will be more and more light reflectors. Mm-hmm. So right. At one point, the world, the old world, will kind of lose its power and it will disappear. Mm-hmm. Is that disappearance what mm-hmm. we call the end of Kali Yuga?
Yes, that's the singularity, because this is a hologram, and it only looks like a world because you're at such a low vibrational frequency that you see objects and you imagine they're solid material things. There aren't any. It's all just pure information, which is carried by the energy of that divine light. And when you realize it as light, there is no world. And then from that high vibrational frequency of God consciousness, another world will appear, but a much more celestial world that is clearly not material, but is divine, is literally a kind of celestial heaven. And that is the vibrational frequency that the next age will be at. It won't fall to our level of gross illusion of materiality that we're now stuck with, but will be at its highest possible state and still be a manifestation.
So the faster this shift happens, the better, of course, for everyone.
The less suffering.
But is there still some kind of a power that maybe might want to maintain the ego world for some time, for some reason, or is it really up to us to kind of just all of us decide that we are tired of that old world and decide to end it?
Well, the more of us who surrender to God and transmit the light, the more that this becomes generalized in the morphogenetic field of the planet, because the light is more coherent, more peaceful, more happy. So if somebody who is in a state of anxiety sees you and you're in a state of peace and joy, they'll say, I want what you're smoking or whatever, right? They're going to want to have that. And when you tell them you don't even have to smoke anything, they'll even be more relieved. And you can deliver that frequency that they can then attune to and then become themselves distributors of the light. So it's kind of a capitalistic thing, and everyone becomes able to distribute more of it to more people and then get more reflections and blessings back as a result. So it's a virtuous cycle of growth and development and co-creation of a new world that is heaven.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who? Is somebody? You. Oh.
The one from Canada.
Our first refugee.
I felt called to speak tonight because all day today I've been glued to my phone and keeping up with everything and gotten a total state of denial and paranoia and depression. And so when you called the satsang today, it was like, of course, like there was no surprise. I kind of felt it coming. It's funny, when I was meditating, I was like, well, everything is just so dark. Like, you know, my melodrama of the ego was in all its depressive mode. And I was like, well, might as well just end now. Like, there's no point in all this. And then I realized, well, that's just going to keep perpetuating that cycle of getting thrown back into the darkness. Like, just because, you know, the physical body escapes doesn't mean anything. And then I thought, oh, what a sick game that is, of trying to find the lightest of the light in the darkest of the dark, and realizing that the darkness is the light. Mm-hmm. And what you said about my own strong emotions about the leader of my country, it's just interesting seeing how I can view, like, that ignorance that he carries towards all of the booing and the et cetera, and how me and my one-pointed focusness to God and not caring about all the maya and all the illusions that keep dragging me down. And it's almost like all of my, it's just so weird to even say this, that all of my hatred towards him all of a sudden turned into compassion and inspiration for, look at this one-pointed focus that I need to embody in myself. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting just now seeing that shift. Yeah, and I think I came into the satsang like really heavy, and now after this, it's almost like a weird inspiration. Mm-hmm. Not only of faith, but of that, you know, direct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's path. Beautiful. So you're already exemplifying what I was saying, that you're getting that energy from total consciousness. And if you really stay one-pointed, you will ascend into that and be absorbed into total consciousness. The only issue you'll have to be concerned with is that you have to unplug from your concern for all those people in Canada and all of the events that are happening, and not let it depress you, and be totally invested in the blissful self, and then bring that energy in rather than take in the negativity from the phenomenal, right? So the energy has to always flow down into the world, not that you take anything from the world. Okay?
Yeah.
You're a total giver of love and joy into the world and wisdom.
Yeah, I really appreciated that, the unplug from the, what was it, eternal Maya field, entire Maya field. Yeah, it was just like a complete... Thank you.
Okay.
Truly.
Thank you. Purush.
Thank you, Shunya. I have a question. You've been mentioning lately that karma is coming with instant blowback, right? I'm curious about how it applies to this situation, and I guess the larger question I have is, like, God won't let it get to this 1984-style totalitarian global state, right? It'll be taken out before that.
That's wishful thinking. That will depend on the willingness of enough yogis to transcend the ego and sacrifice all of that level of jouissance and anxiety in order to become avatars now. And if a critical number and amount of shakti gets poured into this plane, then the darkness will be eliminated and the light will be victorious. But if people, instead of doing that, fall into the paranoid bogey mode or fall into denial and stay in there, or even semi-denial, then yes, things will just continue to get worse and worse, and we'll be way beyond 1984. I mean, we're talking Mad Max here. So that's where it's headed quickly.
And will there be karmic blowback for, I don't know, for Trudeau or for Canada or for any of these gestures that are made that are closing the walls in more and more?
Yes, on a personal level, of course, there will be, but they'll be replaced, you know, for everyone that's thrown under the bus, you know, to satisfy the masses that need to have some sense of that things are okay in order to be able to push the next, level of oppression, that will happen. That's why you see now a kind of a checkerboard response, even in Canada. Some provinces are backing off, right? And so they're giving people the idea, maybe there's enough sanity, right, at certain levels, but that's just part of the plan to confuse people and keep them from wholehearted recognition of where this is going. And you see the same thing in Europe. You know, some countries are backing off, like the UK, and Austria is making it mandatory. Hong Kong is now, I just read today, sending troops to every home, every apartment, to give a COVID test to literally everyone in Hong Kong, a test, which we know the tests are fake. And so if they don't like you, you got a positive test, come with me to the detainment camp, right? So that kind of thing can also spread globally. So we have a very delicate situation that the power will impose itself to the extent that it believes it can get away with it, and when it needs to back off, it'll do that temporarily and come up with something else, which is part of the reason why the Ukraine thing is also happening at this moment, to divert attention and to raise the stakes and justify false flag attacks, whether in Canada or the U.S. or other places, to blame on the villain Russia and achieve other ends, including food shortages, grid going down, and all the things that can happen in the wake of the electric grid disappearing. So we have a situation that's very fluid and will be very, filled with surprises that are extremely sudden and with no way back to the previous level. Yeah. Okay, YR.
So this question about knowing if one's overcome their fear of death is something I've been thinking about lately. I was reading a story of a Swami in India. He used to be a Benedictine monk in France. I can't remember his name right now, but he had a heart attack.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Abhishekhtananda.
Yeah, he studied with Ramana actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was reading his story and I thought to myself, I don't consciously feel a fear of death, which I guess is the whole point of the sensor and a whole heap of other things, but when I think about having a heart attack, that brings up something. that feels very different. So then clearly there's a fear of death. I somehow managed to get into the fear of death through realizing that there's a fear of having a heart attack, and he had this experience, and it was really blissful. And he had then a teaching that came out of it, or a realization, which was like, is there anything but God? It's like a question, and that really stuck with me. But how do you know you've overcome a fear of death? Because it seems like that's a pretty easy thing just to gloss over.
Oh no, I totally agree. It's the core, black hole that the ego mind resists going into and facing. So that's why it's the ultimate achievement, and very few do it. You know, not only did Abhishekhtananda go through that, but his friend Bede Griffiths also did. And Griffith wrote a lot also about it. He also went into a blissful, luminous experience, didn't want to come back. I think he had a stroke, actually, and then...
Was this his disciple? Because he only had one.
He was his disciple for a while until Abhishekananda became Ramana's disciple. But they were colleagues in both being part of the recognition that... The Hindu Trinity was more accurate than the Catholic one, but that they were both intending the same, you know, same Godhead, but that they were both able to get there through understanding it as Satchidananda rather than Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, right? But it was not a they both felt that they had integrated Catholicism and yoga, if you will. So the consciousness really has to recognize that pure awareness is nothing other than death. Okay, that's what it is, and that's why people don't stay in pure awareness. Why do they go back into mental chatter? Because you die. You literally die, not just to your ego, but you realize this is what death is. It's a state of pure awareness that's no longer anchored in a body. Or it no longer has access to the capacity to act or even to think, paralyzed, right? Stroke, no brain action, and it's a total helplessness for the ego, but total freedom for the real self. But the shift of locus from identity with the ego that's losing everything to the self who is now emerging in full empowerment is the diaphanon that most don't cross, because the anxiety gets so high at the point where you're about to cross over that people fall back and say, okay, that's enough. But if you keep going, you'll get through.
I think that's what's most disturbing about it is I see the way I go about my day, and I'm thinking about this effort that needs to be made to go into that, and the death of death is nothing other than like the death of the ego and liberation. But it's really hard to sit still and want to liberate when, even though I'm already liberated, it's a difficult thing to want to do. And I'm just watching all the ways I keep busy throughout the day, and it's almost. It's frustrating, yeah, to not be able to go into it.
Well, that's why most yogis, and including those two, Abhishekananda and Pete Griffiths, recommended love of God, right? And the path of bhakti, which is also recommended even by the Kashmir Shaivites, who are absolute non-dualists, but they say love God, love Shiva. In fact, love Shakti, because you can't even love Shiva. Love Shakti, which is the power of Shiva. And that power can be withdrawn, and then you're dead, right? That's your life energy at any moment. Boom, you can get the heart attack. Anyone can get anything if it's God's will to throw that lightning bolt at that moment. But the point is that if you are in love with that being, then you'll recognize that everything that happens is a blessing, and that death really is liberation, and the fear of that will disappear. And even perhaps a heart attack is the simplest, quickest way. It may be the best to choose to leave, right? You don't want some lingering, you know, awful, long deathbed situation. So in a way, you have to turn everything from its current value system to the value that you would have from that perspective that you're already liberated, right? And then... yeah, let's get rid of this body quicker. You know, it's just a drag. You don't need to have this appendage. You can be much more effective in the world if you're not embodied. You can be in the entire field simultaneously. There's no need to remain local.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. As you were describing this process of death, like going from, like I was getting terrified, but of birth. Like it felt like birth is way more terrifying because you're infinite and then you're coming into this horrible constriction of a body at a small, helpless, like I felt horror of, and I recognize birth is, like I find it way more horrifying, scary, terrible than death.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it seems to be celebrated in the phenomenal plane. Like, well, in this world we live, is births are joyful and deaths are sad. But I find it birth as a terrifying experience, and we know it's a trauma, but it feels that, I don't know, as you were describing, it's like I'm just terrified of
sure.
birth.
Well, spiritual cultures have always said that. Didn't we see that Tibetan movie where they were even saying, yeah, we cry at birth and laugh at death, right? So that's you're exactly right. But you also have to recognize that you chose to be born, too. It wasn't just forced on you. And you had to be born in order to complete some karma that would enable you to graduate from this plane and not have to come back and be born again in another limited form of consciousness. So you need to achieve liberation from that limited state that you took on at birth because you identified with the body and realized you were never born at all. That was a delusion. And it was a delusion that you deliberately accepted because you wanted to live through the intensity of that experience, including the horror of it. And so your attitude got shaped by an experience that was actually the projection of your own mind and never really even happened. Because there is no birth and there is no death. All of that is within the illusion. So until you go beyond that illusion of both, you have to come back and you have to achieve freedom from the illusion while you're in it. You can't do it after you're dead and you're already in the bodiless state. No, you have to come and recognize it and unite those opposites, nirvana and samsara, while alive. That's our final exam to get out of this. Okay?
Thank you. Somehow it made it more complete to understand. It's not just going beyond death or conquer death. It's going beyond birth and death. Like saying
because they never happened.
Exactly.
Okay.
So both don't happen. But
that's right. It's a dream.
If you think you were born, you're going to be afraid of death. So
that's right.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Suzanne, you can pass it right behind.
Thank you, Shunya. What Durga said just really triggered something in me. And also what Yogi Raj was talking about. So there's this place when I'm meditating that I start to rise. I feel the energy moving upward, and I get a lot of pressure up here.
Mm-hmm.
And then that anxiety starts to grab onto me, and it's really intense, and I don't really know what to do with it. I don't know how to... I mean, I can sit with it, I can be present to it, but it doesn't... It's not moving, and I feel like I kind of just get lost there. I just... I lose my way, I end up feeding the anxiety instead of releasing it,
mm-hmm.
And then it came up in my last session was that I was talking about that, and what it felt like was this compression, and I associated with it with this feeling of being born, like you're like something's trying to push you out or push you through, like a really tiny space. And so it was kind of like a strange dichotomy to think that there is a death and a birth at the same time. I'd like to hear what you say about that.
See, you are in a war, and you have to discern who your enemy is. The enemy is the one that's feeling anxiety at the moment you're reaching chakra 6, at least, right? Which is that state in which you can now have mastery over the ego, right? You can't get it until you reach chakra 6 and the third eye opens, right? You're not liberated yet, but you now have the ability to master the ego. So the ego has to take its last shot and create anxiety and hope you will identify with that anxiety and not realize that it's the ego's anxiety that you're about to get liberated from it, and it will die and you will be born again in your God consciousness, right? So as long as you are still partially identified with the ego, you'll identify with the anxiety and you'll close down again. And you'll go through this over and over again. But the moment you realize, I'm not the ego, and that anxiety is not mine, it doesn't have jurisdiction over me, I don't care about it, let it increase, but I'm going out to God, and totally give yourself to that ultimate place, which is the source of awareness of the anxiety and of the bliss, of the light. And then your entire consciousness will be drawn out of the ego and the anxiety will dissipate completely and you'll be just in the bliss and you'll be out of the ego's control and it will be extinguished if you stay there. And then you're liberated and everything will happen spontaneously without an I thought intervening after that.
Okay, that's helpful because I was pushing against it instead of just saying, you know, ego, do your worst, it doesn't matter, I don't care.
Yeah, pushing against it doesn't help because it's still your anxiety at that level.
Yeah, it was getting worse.
You have to be disidentified but not be fighting it, right?
Okay.
And that's true in the macrocosm and the microcosm both.
Right. So learning or relaxing?
Staying in pure awareness. Pure awareness is not anxious. Even if anxiety arises, it's not affected by it.
Yeah.
Right? You remain dead to whatever are the contents of consciousness. They arise, you don't have interest, they disappear, nothing changes within the awareness itself. So you stay in pure awareness and it will completely extinguish.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. Is there anyone else? Did you get triggered? Good.
Just a quick.
Ah, okay.
Now, I'm just very curious. So, these light beings are establishing this new world. And these ego beings are unwillingly dying because it's a world, you know, they get shots, they die or something. So their karma is not fully released. They will be being born again into this new world, right?
Well, not into the new world. The new world will become again an old world, and they'll come when it's an old world at the same vibrational frequency they left it at, but have an opportunity to respond differently. But when you say that they are dying unwillingly, that's only true at the surface level. The sensor knows very well what it's doing if it's choosing to take a lethal injection or whatever. It is a death wish that is being activated that overpowers the conscious mind and keeps it in denial. But it is still a deliberate action that the soul is allowing to occur. Okay, so no one is a victim, and we have to, you know, not feel that either. And it's not true that the beings of light are bringing a new world. God is bringing the new world because there aren't really a number of beings. That's part of the illusion. And it's only when you get out of the illusion that you are a being of light that you actually are a being of light. So non-duality is essential.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm like on the precipice of a question. I'm trying to take in everything that you're speaking, and all the questions have been helpful about attachment to the body and fear of death and this anxiety, all things I think we can all identify, but this being in particular. And I actually swore off the news this week, so I knew things were escalating, and I was finding myself in this like obsession with watching it all unfold. And I don't know if it's lack of compassion or dispassion, right? There's this, I think, from being here and feeling a little bit detached from it, like kind of watching it unfold in a space where I am not, and that it's not really affecting me here, and I'm grateful for that. But also, there's that question. It feels like a movie, right? And there's not this connection to it. So I was kind of, when you said that we don't have a dog in the fight, I appreciated that, but I'm also kind of questioning that motivation that I have to watch this happening, which is why I swore off the news. And I guess what I want to say is that I have the same question. I'm always inspired by the potential to be of service in this time for everyone and everything that we learn here and can apply in order to be light beings and be that for the world, but also be that for those beings that appear here and everybody that we connect to online. But there's also such an attachment every day to trying to fight to get out of the ego in order to be of service that I was just recognizing that it's probably some kind of also an egoic pursuit, because it's still, and you were just explaining to Yogi Raj about being bodiless, but there's still something that's still wanting to be trapped in the body in order to be of service. So when you said that, I kind of questioned it in my own mind, like, how does one serve while being bodiless, and my own attachment to being in a body to be of service, and it goes back to the compassion or lack of compassion and dispassion. There's kind of a disconnect in the ego's mind, I think, about what it really wants and the reality of God and connecting to. A God outside of myself. I don't know if I'm making any sense as a coherent question, but
yeah, no, it is an important point that you're raising. So you shut off the external news media, but you didn't shut off the internal media, and that's what you have to free yourself from, because otherwise the ego thoughts will continue, and they'll be even more because you're not diverting into the other media. And so very obsessive kinds of thoughts can take over. So that's not the solution. That's why renunciation and, you know, going to a cave or a cloister or whatever doesn't do anything. Your mind is still going to be there. So you have to shut that off. And then you don't ask the ego what it wants, okay? The ego can want God and convince you that it's a great ego and you should keep it alive and use it, but it's fooling you. Because its wanting of God is always keeping God at a distance, right? I want God, but is always there. So it's when the wanting stops that the being actually is achieved. So there has to be only a silencing of the mind, not a figuring out of anything, not a fighting with anything, no activity of the mind. There has to be a complete freedom from conceptualization, imagery, scenarios, emotions, all of that. And it's in that flatlining of the ego mind that the Supreme Consciousness can be accessed. Okay?
Yeah, I was like avoiding asking a how question, like how do you cross the threshold and like how do you tap into that power? But
right. Well, one way is love, which we've been talking about, and the ego hates love, you see. So that's the real resistance. It's not that you don't know how, it's that I'm not going to open my heart and love and be vulnerable, right? And surrender? Are you kidding? No way. So, and that's the current problem that nearly every ego has. It wants autonomy and control, but at the wrong level, and so it can never receive the real power. Thank you. Okay. Was this useful to have a current events meeting? So, okay, well, I'll keep bringing information. I'll read the news for you. You don't have to. And and let you know if there's anything important. And I'll tell some people not to come if I think it'll trigger them. For those who can handle it, I think it's important to keep aware of where we are in time so that we are in time to be in the right state of consciousness for the challenges that we're going to have to face. So thank you all for your willingness to attune to the highest frequency and also face the bad news of Kali Yuga's destruction and recognize it as a blessing and as the opportunity for all of us to undo all the bad karma of the past by becoming bodhisattvas and avatars and bringing light into the world. That's how we pay off our debts from all the past lives and the current life, is bringing in love and light and joy and wisdom and empowerment and giving it out and helping others see through the illusions that they're still under so that they can also be liberated while alive. So thank you all for being agents of God, whether secret agents or overt, wearing a badge, but you are all deputized by the Supreme Sheriff to bring order back to the planet. So tikkun olam, let's repair the world by bringing the Mashiach in every being, bringing the light, bringing the power of Christ, bringing the Buddha nature, and then creating a world that is worth living in and experiencing as the work of art of divine intelligence and love that it's meant to be. Namaste.